This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Taco to go, taco to,
and a big queue.
Taco to go, taco to go.
We just review.
Quick Trip Taco, just $2.99. Comes with a big queue, this deal so fine. Brisket breakfast, so much to choose for $2.99. You really can't
taco,
lose.
Taco to go, taco to,
this deal legit.
Taco to go.
Only at Quick Trip.
Taco to go, taco to go, taco to go.
$2.99.
It's Mike Shope.
We were having a very serious conversation about mayonnaise here.
And the Bulldog.
And don't even talk to me about weed.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
You ever hear about putting mayonnaise on a turkey? You ever hear anybody do that?
You mean as you're cooking it?
Yeah.
No.
A podcast I like, a baseball podcast I like, CBS. One of the guys on that show, Chris Towers, was talking about how good it is. He said he got it from the New York Times.
There has
like
to be
basting
it has
a
to be
turkey
real with mayonnaise
in mayonnaise. Yeah, you know, just first reaction, pass.
Ew.
First reaction is kind of like never ever.
What does mayonnaise smell like after it sits in your oven for 10 minutes?
It might be good. He said the key to it is there's a high smoke point.
Ah, well, that stands to reason. Yeah.
Would it really even be noticeable? If you didn't know this turkey you were eating on Thanksgiving had been basted in mayonnaise, maybe you would just think some magic trick has happened. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't think I'd want to tell people that I did it. At turkey dinner, that I did this to their turkey.
Yeah.
Covered it in mayonnaise before putting it in the oven.
And then continue to do that as it's cooking.
Just get the spatula going, and every once in a while, lather it back up.
Yeah.
With Hellman's. May your Thanksgiving dinner be delicious.
Right. I don't know. I mean, I love any turkey sandwich, mayo.
Right. See,
right,
there you go.
Turkey sub, mayo.
Yep.
Of course. Right.
There's a connection right there.
Man, basting an entire turkey in mayo. I don't know, man. The smoke factor, I just feel like that could be really pungent.
Not for you.
Yeah.
You don't really, well, you're going to say, I don't need to make it better. I don't need to take this chance. But you might not say that because, you know, people tend to complain about turkey and that it's far from the highlight of the meal.
Yeah. I used to be like that. I don't, you know, prepared properly, cooked the right amount of time. It's fantastic.
It's okay.
I think it's fantastic if it's, you know, done right.
Okay.
I like it a lot. I like it more than you. Although I am still pretty disappointed that year, it was a couple years ago that we scrambled for a turkey late, hosting Thanksgiving dinner. Somehow Wednesday morning we still had no turkey.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we sent the oldest son out to the store, and he sent me back a picture of some sort of range free, the turkey. $200 turkey,
yep,
or something.
Heirloom.
Like, what in the world is happening here? It's the only option. Okay, here we go. I got a bit for the radio. I'm blowing $200 on a friggin' turkey for Thanksgiving, and it was good.
It's fine.
It was, yes.
We'll get to the bills here. Bobby is on WGR. Hi, Bobby.
How you doing, Mike?
Good.
I wanted to weigh in on the whole mayonnaise on the turkey thing.
Yes. The whole mayo on the turkey thing that we've been talking about for weeks.
Please.
So it's basically an egg wash and oil mixture, which works really good at browning things. So it would work really good on a turkey. I use it to make grilled cheese sandwiches all the time, and they come out perfect.
I've heard that too. That the same podcast, the guy mentioned that too, grilled cheese. So
yeah. So I honestly, I would try it.
All right, good. Thanks, Bobby. Good to have somebody other than me secondhand vouch for this idea.
See, the grilled cheese, the kids do this. They grill sandwiches. They use mayo instead of butter to do that. So I've seen that, and that does not result in like a smoky mess. I just think the problem I'm having here is not the combination of mayo and turkey. Fine. I mean, I stand strong behind mayo is the number one condiment for a turkey sandwich. It's just in the oven for that long. I don't know. I just feel like it's...
It doesn't sound good, but apparently it is good.
I feel like it would brown it too fast, even. But, well, hey, all right. Listen.
I guess it's done.
Yep.
That's all I'm saying is I guess it's done. Here's that heated conversation about mayonnaise you have all been waiting for to have come back to the show. CJ is with us. Hello.
Hey, gentlemen. How you doing?
Good, thanks.
I do not touch my turkey unless it's deep fried and after the fact. But I just had a random question. It's the off season. It could be nothing. Maybe I'm hopeful. As far as Keon Coleman, I just wanted to know, with the addition of Elijah Moore, having Palmer on the team, and most teams playing man defense against the Bills, at least until Cooper joined the team, what corner... Like, does Coleman do better against a lesser corner, meaning the third corner or fourth corner, because you have Shakir, Palmer, and hopefully Elijah Moore makes a team? What corner do they put on Coleman, and does that give him a chance to do even better because he's having a lesser defender against him, if that makes sense?
Well, I mean, it stands to reason that it would it be helpful to any player to have, you know, to be perceived as the guy least worthy of your attention. So therefore, you know, the trickle down, you're going to get, you know, your least talented defender, at least on that position, on him. That's one of the things that I think the Bills might. I shouldn't say it that way because I don't know that they feel this way. I don't know that I've heard them, you know, Bean, McDermott, Allen, actually say this. But I think the question CJ poses is a reason the Bills like the model of everybody eats as much as they do. Because to an extent, I think what they're trying to do is neutralize. If you've got a guy that can shut down my best guy, you're... It's wasted on me because I'm not going to favor one guy. One guy, you're going to win the game not knowing what to do with your best guy. And he's going to take someone away, but everybody's sort of equal here, and so it doesn't matter that much. You know, I don't know. They got through. I mean, they did great last year with it. I don't know what to expect for Coleman as far as that goes. I think as the season begins, once they start playing – if he flashes, then he's going to get attention. And that goes for anybody on the team, I think. Even maybe Shakir. Like, if Shakir were to be fed to such an extent that a team would go, all right, our slot corner's not enough. We need to do something else. We need to put Jalen Ramsey on this guy because he's killing us. Then maybe you'll see that. But I don't think you get an answer to that until the game start and if someone emerges as the number one target on the team. Otherwise, teams might just go with you're playing the left, you're playing the right, and doesn't really matter who's running patterns.
Yeah, this was part of the conversation before the playoff game against Denver, which was about Patrick Surtain and the Broncos having this shutdown corner, and, well, how valuable is that in a matchup against a team that throws the ball to so many different players? And the Bills did win that game easily. 8 different players caught passes for the Bills in that game, and only Shakir had more than 3. Ended up being kind of a runaway, but that's kind of what that was. And again, like you said, you always want a weaker matchup for a guy. Coleman is maybe the biggest question I have about them at all, anywhere, is him. And if he doesn't produce, like if he doesn't take a step, are they in tough? Are they in bad shape if that doesn't happen? No, I think they're covered. What they have chosen not to do is, one way or another, bring in somebody dangerous. Like, nobody on the Bills is dangerous at that position. They're all okay. You know, they're all varying degrees of pretty good. And, you know, that's the whole, that's intentional. That's the philosophy. That's what they pivoted to when they dumped Diggs, and it was successful. And much like last year, when we saw them run the ball a lot more late in the season and win games, and then made as a takeaway that they would want to keep doing that because they were successful at it, they did. And that is exactly what happened. And they were successful again for an entire season. So I doubt that will be different. And all the wide receiver hubbub of recent days, and they're not addressing it seriously in the draft, is more evidence. It's this year, it's the action or the inaction at the position in the draft, you know, due respect to Josh Palmer and that signing, plus Brandon Bean's words. And so there's just no reason to think they don't have the guy for it. It isn't Coleman, and it's not going to kill him if Coleman doesn't, you know, make a huge step forward this year, because they have a lot of guys they can call on.
Yeah. So many, in fact, that I never got around to spitting this out yesterday, but I think Coleman, I'm glad it came up today. Coleman being what you, how did you just describe it? It maybe your biggest concern or biggest question mark you might have about, like, who's going to be doing what, who can you really count on? I think the best case I could make for bringing Gabe Davis back would be because of that. But there's a, like Sal was saying yesterday when we talked with him, like, you're not bringing him back as your sixth guy, as a guy that's potentially inactive or something. Like, he's probably right back where he was, you know, on your team. It might be weird given how popular he was and what a hard worker he was if he wasn't in that role. And I just don't think they'd want to block Coleman that way. But having some insurance, you know, could be useful. Like, they, you know, they're not the same player, but size-wise, down the field, I mean, that's what Davis was. Coleman, we don't really have that much of a sample to really pigeonhole him as to how they're going to deploy him, how they're going to use him, you know, other than the odd, you know, back shoulder jump ball type stuff. So I don't know if that really works. But to me, that's the best. If somebody wanted to come, the best idea for Davis, if you wanted to come say, I'm worried about Coleman, I think you should get Davis back, I think I got to listen to that, at least, a case be made. I always wanted to do better than Gabe Davis, but we're where we are. You know, who's available is who's available. And I like the, like, if you felt like you needed another guy, especially an outside guy, I'd listen to Davis even before I would listen to Amari Cooper coming back.
But I would you not agree, consider a Davis return very unlikely?
Yeah, because I think they are going to want to see Coleman through. Right. That's exactly. But,
and how many times can you get away with saying you're not, you don't feel like criticizing their lack of, you know, effort addressing wide receiver is out of line, and then keep signing wide receivers? Like, Elijah Moore was the same day that they had brought him in, and he was signed a couple of days later. There really can't be much more of that, if any more of that, coming down the road here, the way Brandon Bean was so defiant about how they didn't need to do it and, you know, doesn't appreciate any idea to the contrary. Let's go to Zach next. Hi, Zach.
Hey, guys. If you'll oblige, I'd love to jump back to the schedule talk here.
Sure, of course.
This totally falls under the probably too good for opening weekend game, but I think Baltimore at Buffalo Sunday Night Football week one is money. I mean, again, you could do that game week one, week 10, whenever, but just the storyline there I think is so good for opening weekend. I mean, you have reigning MVP versus past MVP. I mean, it's just too good. I like Jets at Buffalo on Christmas as well. I don't think the schedule makers are taking jersey colors into account really at all when they're making games, but I mean, come on, you put the Bills in those candy cane jerseys versus Jets in their green on Netflix, like, let's go. That's Christmas literally right there. So and then I would do Dolphins the following week to close out the stadium. That's what I would do.
Thank you, Zach. That's the colorblind game, red versus green. We're not going to get red versus green again. I don't think they
will allow that to happen again. I think, yeah, that was a Thursday night game.
Thursday night, color rush, and I guess maybe they didn't realize that to people who are colorblind, those teams would look the same. Travis Yost said, that about that Bills Jets game.
Yep.
So I doubt they would do that again.
It's your point. Like, this game is too good for too early, right? Too good for the opener. Too good. So you know that's in the back of my mind here, thinking about it. Ravens Bills, I could totally see. Like, if I were allowed to place wagers on the most likely week one outcomes, like week one games for the Bills, I feel like I would, you know, depending on what the odds were, and that would probably be short odds, because I think that's a juicy matchup. The caller just said it, the last two MVPs in the league, and there's going to be a lot of appeal there. So I could see, I wouldn't rule that game out for me. It's not Bills Chiefs. You know, it's very, very close. And maybe we'll become, maybe someday the Ravens will be our problem, or we'll be the Ravens' problem, or
kind
something.
Of are.
We kind of are the Ravens' problem. I mean, they haven't beaten us in the playoffs, twice. We've got that over them, at least, here during this 5-year window that we're you know, still enjoying. I like that game as a week one night game.
I could see it. I understand. What's my problem with it?
Too good?
Not so much too good. And this really, I think my problem right now in articulating this is just like, who knows anything? It's hard enough with actual games. This is what happened. This is what went wrong, whatever. It's hard enough sometimes. The schedule is just like totally a guess. What would, you could have all the right thoughts and still don't know that, oh no, because there's, you know, a Neil Diamond concert or something. Like, like, it's just, you could just have it nailed. I'd want for the Sunday night opener, so Philadelphia will play on the Thursday night. And what's possible there? A lot of things. I think, you know, Washington is good. Rams are okay. Even Chicago or Detroit are okay. I kind of like the Washington idea. But Philadelphia will play.
Even Dallas.
Philadelphia will almost definitely play an NFC opponent on the Thursday night. So if it matters, Sunday night, I can turn to the AFC. And I just think Kansas City is, they're the bigger draw, right? Buffalo's a great draw, but Kansas City is Kansas City. And I think they're a better story coming off that loss. I'd want to see the Chiefs there, I think. And that doesn't have to be a home game either. Like, Kansas City
right
at Dallas is on the schedule this year. Dallas being Dallas. Like, maybe that works. They could also, however, get the Friday night. That's been the rumor, that Friday night in Brazil, which will involve the Chargers, will be the Chiefs and the Chargers.
Ooh.
And so we'll see if that's true. Then they're off the board if that happens. And I've also had an AFC game, if it matters. Then maybe you're back to, if you're thinking this way, which, you know, you don't have to be, then you can maybe see the Bills there on the Sunday. I mean, there are so many choices.
And you know, to further the point about, you know, so much that we don't know, CBS has had the Chiefs and Bills the last 2 years, 425. And I don't know how protective the networks are allowed to be about that sort of stuff. Like, I just don't know how the machinations of that work with the league, with the team. I'm sure everyone's got preferences. Teams have preferences. Networks would have preferences. Does NBC have a right to at some point stand up and go, hey, it's been 4 years since we've had Bills Chiefs. You know, enough already with Nance and Romo. Can we get it, please? And, like, that's a fly in the ointment right away to Ravens-Bills being a Sunday night game. Because I doubt that NBC would get both of those games. Like, CBS could be maybe talked into, hey, you've had Bills-Chiefs all these years. Why don't we let NBC have that, and you can have Bills-Ravens? Again, I'm just wildly guessing, but I think those are marquee games that any network would want to have. And so maybe there's a process where, you know, they got to choose one or the other, and the odd man out gets the other game.
I like the idea of Bills at Patriots being a night game early. Doesn't have to be early. I'm thinking about Diggs. We've talked about this one. Diggs isn't so top of mind for you when it comes to them, but they're sort of an interesting story, the Patriots, and I'd want to put Buffalo there like they did the Jets a couple of years ago to see if they're up to the test, if the Patriots are up to that test. I'm sure that the people who put the schedule together are, at least to some extent, think about this differently than I do. A storyline like that, somebody who makes the schedule could be like, oh, we don't look up, we don't think about things like that. You know, we're not looking to test anybody. You know, we're just right. We're trying to get eyeballs. But I'm looking for storylines. And I got a couple more I'll give you here because we haven't done any, like Sal and I, too, haven't done any week one primetime predictions. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's next week. So I'll give you a couple more thoughts on this as we go. Coming up at 4:45 or thereabouts, we're going to talk to Adam Drant. He is a part of the Ride for Roswell coming up in June. Bulldog is riding. It's a huge event. Big initiative at the station, too, is to promote Ride for Roswell and help with the fundraising effort there. So we'll talk to one of the riders at 5, Greg Wyshynski, ESPN. They have doubleheader tonight in the NHL playoffs, and we'll catch up then with Greg. 803-0550 for your calls. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.